So welcome all to this Aspiring MSL session. It's wonderful to have so many of you alongside us for the purposes of this webinar. My name is Helen Kane. I am CEO of One MSL, and I am delighted to be joined today by my colleague, Heather Senior. So hello, Heather.
Hello.
And thank you. Just a brief disclaimer for those of you that are joining us, that the purpose of this webinar is to really provide aspiring MSLs with an overview of what you might need to consider in your pursuit of a future role. Without further ado, as I've just said, I'm Helen Kane, CEO of One MSL. A brief part about me: I'm a pharmacist by background, spent 25 years in the pharmaceutical industry and medical affairs, and have been working in my current role for almost 6 years. And this is my colleague, Heather. So Heather, a little bit about you, please.
Well, it just says that I've had MSL experience for 15 years, but it's now 20. I hate to say it, but it's quite a long time in a number of therapeutic areas. And I came from a nursing background, so I came with no experience into the role of the pharmaceutical industry, and have spent the last 20 years as an MSL. I also do facilitation and coaching, a lot of training nowadays. So, I've changed over the years.
Fantastic. So Heather is not only a colleague, she's a very trusted friend as well. So it's really great to share this webinar with you, Heather. So a little bit about One MSL. I just want to clarify that we are in fact not a recruitment agency. We are a specialist medical training consultancy, and our foundation is firmly rooted within medical affairs and the pharmaceutical industry. And everything that we do is really driven by a desire to maximize the impact of the MSL and MSL leader. And we are recognized for that passion. We are proud to be recognized for that passion. And we continue in our mission to support organizations, individuals, and teams to being best in class. So that's really about who we are. And let's now just take a moment to think about previous aspiring MSLs that we have been able to support. So I'm just going to bring to life three different profiles for you so that you can appreciate the breadth of backgrounds individuals might come into the MSL role that they have. So firstly, we have our profile number one, and this was a PhD candidate which I met in 2016, and he attended a program with us, and he was fortunate. He secured his first role in 2016, and he went on to become an MSL manager, and today is a senior medical manager within the organization. So his PhD was in the field of oncology. The second candidate was a pharmacist who attended one of our programs, and he went on to secure a role in the following year. The subsequent year became a senior MSL within 2 years, and today works as a medical affairs partner within a top 10 pharma company. And the third profile is someone we've helped most recently, and this is an individual who is currently working within medical information. So that is a function within the industry, and he attended one of our programs in June of this year and went on to secure his first MSL role in July. So I'm hoping that those profiles might resonate with you in terms of where you are in your professional life, but please know that it is possible to move from either academia, healthcare, or industry into the role of the MSL. And the purpose of today is really to try and call out for you how you might be successful, what you need to consider to be successful. So by the end of this session, you will know what is the role of the MSL and why this role is so very important. What is the current reality for the MSL of today? And then we're going to share with you our top 10 tips to support you breaking into the role of the MSL. And finally, how we can support you to make the transition from academia, from healthcare into industry. So I am going to lead on the first part of the webinar, and then I'm going to hand over to Heather, who's going to take control of the second part. Okay, interesting comments there. I'm considering the role, but concerned I'm far too commercial.
Yeah, well, we can have a little chat about that when we come into the top tips. I'll remember to bring that into the sort of like, but I mean, we both know, Helen, that there are many people that have moved from commercial into the medical affairs function. So it's not a closed door by any stretch of the imagination.
It's not. And actually, you know, there was a school of thought, and we'll talk about this later, wasn't there, that in order to be an MSL, you had to have a PhD. And today people are saying, actually, it's much more important to recruit for skills, that science and knowledge can be taught, but skills are harder to acquire and to demonstrate. So please don't lose faith. If that is your view, please don't lose faith. There we go. And someone has just shared they've transitioned from commercial to medical just recently. So it is entirely possible. Thank you. So let's just move on. So who is the MSL? And this is quite a provocative cover. This is a cover of a publication. I spoke at a conference back in 2018. And in fact, the MSL of today is quite often referred to as a superhero. And I feel that that's, as I said, that's quite contentious, because I think it clearly we are super passionate about the role of the MSL, but they are one of many functions that are responsible for the success of an organization. I think, you know, the superhero powers that MSLs need to have is the ability to wear many, many hats, to multitask, to juggle many projects, and really, as people often say, to be the eyes, the ears, and the voice of medical affairs. So in some respects, the MSL of today does need to have superhero powers. But if we want to go for more of a typical definition, this is what you might find if you look on a site such as the MSL Society. And there's an awful lot of information here. This gives you a sense of the breadth of the role. So the MSL can work across a number of industries, whether it's pharma, biotech, devices, CROs, or other industries. They don't always, but more often than not, MSLs will tend to focus on one specific therapeutic area and a disease state. And as I said earlier, we can see here in the second paragraph that the MSL of today may have a BSc, they may have an MSc, or indeed they may have advanced training, a PhD, a PharmD, or indeed an MD. And we can see some other comments here about where they work throughout the company. But really, the primary role of the MSL of today, in the simplest of terms, is to utilise the scientific expertise for the benefit of both the internal organisation and the external organisation in terms of the building of scientific relationships with healthcare professionals, key external experts, and the likes at relevant academic institutions and healthcare clinics. It is a super demanding role. It requires a lot in terms of knowledge and skills, but suffice to say, there is significant growth in the numbers of MSLs of today, and they come from a wide variety of backgrounds. So the answer is no. A PhD is not always required. It can sometimes be required by companies, but not always required. The question regarding how we can help, we'll deal with that at the end. And the final question, an M-Farm. Yes, I mean, that's obviously an advantage. But I think it's really important for those of you that are thinking about applying for an MSL role to know that it's not always called an MSL. So you can see here some other terms that are used by other companies, and it's really important that you're aware of this because jobs may not necessarily be advertised under the title of MSL. I've just given you five here, but in fact, we've come across almost 30 different titles for the role of the MSL. So suffice it to say, every organisation will define the role according to the specific needs of that company. And that's something that you need to be mindful of. So we've talked about a little bit about the role. So let's now think about how does that relate to the business of pharma? And here we have a question. What is the purpose of the pharmaceutical industry? Does anyone want to try and answer this in chat? What do you see as the purpose of the industry? Fantastic. Improve the lives of patients. There we go. R&D, absolutely. But really, we've sort of called out some high-level definitions here. The purpose of the industry is to bring life-saving and life-enhancing products to patients, which may be used to diagnose, cure, treat, or prevent disease. And we see on the right the different types of products that industry is currently involved with today. And I know, Heather, that you call this out in particular. Cellular and gene therapies are really the hot areas of today. Isn't that correct?
Absolutely. There's an expansion of new science coming through. It's very, very exciting. And there is a huge need for the medical liaison here, because understanding what cellular and gene therapies are in its own right is challenging with your healthcare professionals. So there's a huge amount of work that's sort of I see expanding in the next few years.
And actually, so why does this matter to anyone who's thinking about being an MSL? It's so important that you do your research on the company that you want to join. You need to understand what their interests are, what their areas of focus are, but Heather will touch on that further later. So how is this achieved? How does pharma, how does industry improve the lives of patients? And I think someone called this out, they talked about R&D. And in fact, there is this entire process that from discovery, the discovery phase, through to clinical development, regulatory approval, and commercialization. And here we start to see industry language starting to creep in. And if we think about this process as a whole, this is referred to as a product life cycle. And if we link that back to the definition of the MSL, as we saw earlier from the MSL Society, the MSL is legitimately able to be involved throughout the drug life cycle or throughout the product life cycle. There are opportunities for MSL activities, certainly from clinical development moving forwards. And here we have, an overview, a cartoon that really simplifies what is in fact a very complex process. And you can see here that the time frame associated with the product life cycle and bringing a drug from discovery to approval is really, in the majority of cases, is quite a long time frame. And in the yellow at the bottom, I'm sorry if it's not very clear, you can see that the cost is in the millions to billions of US dollars. So it's a high risk, high cost endeavor. And in order for that product to receive its marketing authorization, there are a huge number of functions that are involved in that entire process. And the MSL is just only one of those many functions. And the reason that I've decided to show you this slide is that, sometimes if you are facing challenges with respect to the MSL role, consider the fact that there are potentially many other options within industry. And sometimes it's better to think, it's better to find an entry point into your company and then look at developing. We've heard of people within chat who've already done that. So really be open-minded to the possibilities that might exist outside of the MSL role. But here we see highlighted in red that the MSL role is sitting within medical affairs, and medical affairs is critical to the product life cycle. And the purpose of medical affairs, there's not one clear purpose. Medical affairs is all about expertise. It sits as a pillar between R&D and commercial, and there are many activities that are conducted within medical affairs that are critical to the success of a drug receiving its marketing authorization and going into commercialization. So this just shows you, starts to, I hope, illustrate the scale of what is involved for medical affairs and indeed for the MSL. So who is the MSL? We saw the definition earlier, and this again is a simple cartoon showing the MSL as the scientific expert sitting here in the middle as the face of medical affairs. And they are a trusted colleague. They work alongside their internal partners from across a wide range of departments, using their scientific expertise to upskill, to be a strategic partner, to be a project partner. And in terms of the external aspect of the role, it really is about relationship management, identifying who are the key stakeholders and building those relationships and engaging in appropriate activities so that the external stakeholders have the information they require in order to do the right thing for the patient, so that patients are able to access the right drug at the right time. You'll see here that there is no arrow between the internal company and the patients and the MSL. That is because it is very unlikely that the MSL will ever directly engage with patients. Their engagement is much more likely to be with other stakeholders. So typical MSL activities, and I just want to say that these are only a few of the many activities that MSLs are involved with. So attending congresses, wonderful. We all love to go to congresses to upskill, but also we attend congresses to network, to provide information on request, to hear all about the breaking science. And of course, we're now moving back into the world of live conference again. And this is very much part of the exciting aspect for many MSLs around their role, is to go and hear the breaking data, to hear the science, to be part of the buzz that sits around the respective therapeutic area. And so again, you see a number of activities that are typically associated with the MSL role. And again, these are quite industry focused. And in terms of today, it's not possible to really get into too much detail, but just be reassured that this is a job which has got such diversity and really can sometimes be quite overwhelming. Would you agree, Heather? It's quite a sophisticated role.
Absolutely. And it changes. The longer you're in it, the more there is. You seem to accumulate more and more activities and skills and requirements. So it's never a static role. It changes all the time. It's fantastic.
No 2 days are ever the same.
Never.
So what do you need to know? What do you need to know in order to be an MSL? And I know that some of you were asking about, do I have to have a PhD? And I think the answer is no. But generally, it would be expected that you have a depth of scientific expertise associated with a specific therapeutic area. So providing you can demonstrate that expertise at interview, you are on a road to securing your role. But we call this a triangle of success. And the triangle of success, the intention here is that it's not enough to simply know the science. It's really important that MSLs have excellent communication skills, whether that be written or spoken. And in addition, that they then understand the business of pharma. The MSL has got real clarity on what the organization is trying to achieve, where the product is in its life cycle, what are the goals. Much of this will be communicated within onboarding, but from an interview perspective, it's so important that you do your homework so that you ask yourself, what are the expectations of me? What is it that I might be expected to know at interview so that I can demonstrate that I understand the competencies associated with the role of the MSL? So I just now want to share with you some facts. And these are really around the MSL role in the 21st century healthcare industry. And the reason that I say these are facts is because, in fact, they're findings from our annual global survey. And the purpose of that survey is to really understand current reality for the MSL of today. Now, again, in the interests of time, it's impossible for us to cover all of the survey findings. And if you would like to access the survey findings and indeed many other really useful resources, please can I encourage you to join our One community. You can see the link here on this screen. This is a free community and there is a wealth of resources within it which will support you in your pursuit of an MSL role. You simply need to create an account and you'll then be able to access all of the resources. And one of the resources that you will find are the overarching findings of this survey. But for the purposes of today, I'm just going to share with you a few key findings that I hope will stimulate your thinking and will really start to bring to life for you the differences that can exist for this role within the global industry and what it is that you might need to know in order to be successful. Just a little bit of background. So we opened the survey at the beginning of the year and we had respondents from 61 countries. It was phenomenal. And you can see here the split of respondents. So we had a great proportion where MSLs who are field-based. This is an industry term, which essentially means that individuals are not based in an office, that they are work usually from home within the specific region or territory that they cover. So it's a fascinating mix of respondents. And this map shows you where those respondents were located. So wherever you might be listening to this webinar, you can see that the findings are reflective of a truly global population, which really adds to the credibility of the findings. And this is one of the first questions that we ask. What is the size of your organization? And you can see that almost two-thirds worked in how they defined it as a large pharmaceutical organization. And then you can see others from the different types of organizations. We spoke to this earlier in the webinar. And why is this important? This is really important for you to consider because the type of role that you might be applying for will be quite different if you're part of a large organization or if you're thinking about joining a small organization, for example, a startup biotech. So it's important to consider that as part of your planning. What size of organization might best suit me? So of course, within large organizations, There will be a wealth of resources there to support you. You'll have access to probably all of the right tools, all of the right systems, all of the right training. And that may not be as obvious in a smaller company. So you need to ask yourself, what are my needs? What type of individual am I? Do I want to work autonomously? Am I quite confident to go and search out for myself, or do I need to be more closely supported? So it's an important consideration. We then ask individuals what was their role prior to becoming an MSL. And I hope that this gives you all great confidence to know that many individuals who responded to the survey actually were not in industry prior to securing their first MSL role. So you can see 23% were in healthcare, 20% in academia. But for those of you that are on this call and have moved into the role of the MSL from another role, for example, commercial, or aspire to move into the role of the MSL from another role, you too can be successful. Coming back to this qualifications question, and I'm going to show two findings here. So I really hope that this puts to bed any concern that you have that it's essential to have a PhD. In fact, we can see a slight change here. There's a pattern that is suggesting that not so many individuals, in fact, have a PhD who are today in the role of the MSL. So whilst for some organizations that might be essential, it's not always a necessity. Therapy areas and life cycle involvement. So as I said earlier, it's for 50% of MSLs, they do in fact cover only one therapeutic area, but there are others that are expected to cover as many as three or more. And that again is a really important consideration for any potential job you're looking at. How many therapeutic areas might I be expected to cover? Because the more therapy areas you're expected to cover, the more demands you have in terms of maintaining your scientific knowledge and being up to date. And that can be a challenge for some MSLs. And the finding on the right is really with respect back to that visual that we showed around the product life cycle. And you can see here that there are MSLs that are engaging as early as phase one, but the vast majority are actually working in this period that we call post-marketing authorization. So that is where a product is in fact available within the marketplace. But the earlier you can be involved, then you get a greater exposure to different types of healthcare professionals and different types of activities, and you can build relationships much earlier. All of these, of course, are important questions for you to consider for interview. Another finding is which of these does your role cover? So you can see here that for the vast majority of respondents, they have a region within a country, but there are those roles that are in fact a national role. And that's a big ask. A national role will involve a huge amount of travel. So you need to ask yourself, do my personal circumstances, is that going to work for me? But many people love to travel, but don't underestimate the demands that it can make of you. It's a really important consideration. A question has come in, is it good to start out in a niche area? That entirely depends. You know, if there's a job that is totally aligned to your expertise, then that's a good match for you. That's certainly a good starting point. But at the end of the day, it has to be the right fit between yourself and the company. Does it clearly define what the expectations are of you in terms of where you need to be based, the area that you will cover, and consider that in the context of your personal circumstances. The question is, which of the following topics do you believe should be included as part of MSL onboarding? So onboarding refers to the training that you receive when you join an organization. For some organizations, the training that you may receive is simply around the therapy area, the disease management, the scientific data. But this is what MSLs have told us. They have told us that I believe that all of these topics should be included within my onboarding. And the reason for that comes back to the competencies. It's a complex role. It's a sophisticated role. So it's a great consideration for interview is to ask, what might my onboarding look like? How will you support me in my onboarding? What should I expect to learn in my onboarding so that I can be best prepared to go out and do my job? How different is the role of the clinical trial liaison compared to an a medical science liaison? Great question. So clinical trial liaison invariably focus solely on the support of clinical trials. So it is very much a role that is dedicated to the successful delivery of a clinical trial. And so there'll be a narrower remit around opportunities to engage. So those are the differences. An MSL might do some activities that a clinical trial liaison can be involved with, but it's unlikely that a clinical trial liaison will cover the breadth of tasks that an MSL will. So I hope that answers the question. So clinical operations is really a dedicated, and R&D sits quite separate to medical affairs, but there's a lot of collaboration that exists between clinical operations and medical affairs. And finally, I think I see one more question. Oh, that's a big question. And I think that really, if you're thinking about salary, that will depend on the country that you live in, that will depend on the size of organization. And I think that that is a question that you need to be guided by either the recruiter or by the company talent source. Because if you want to get some examples of salaries, I think the MSL Society talks to that, but it's not a question that we'll be able to deal with here today. Heather, over to you.
Thanks very much. Well, what we wanted to do was give you some top tips, and that's not easy to say, top tips, top 10 tips, I should say. And this comes from our experience. It's our experience as medical affairs professionals. It's our experience as MSL managers, as experienced interviewers, but also as mentors and coaches to MSLs that are actually enrolled or aspiring to be in role. So it's not exhaustive, but we thought these would be the top 10. The first one, you know, is so important to have that right mindset. We've already seen before is I'm in commercial, you know, can I get a job as an MSL? Your mindset is to believe that you can be successful. You could be successful because you have a number of skills that actually pertain to the role. So don't limit yourself. And be aware that actually the perfect candidate on paper is often, and I say often with a big OFT in, is often not the right candidate and therefore will not be the right employee for the company. So it's not just what's on your CV. There's obviously the whole interview process. So you can have this opportunity too. You need to have persistence and resilience. There will be knockbacks, but knockbacks, see them as opportunities to learn to grow. So have that growth mindset of, it didn't work out this time. What did I learn from it that actually I can be more successful next time? So have that persistence and have that resilience to do that. There are a huge amount of resources available online, and please do access them. You'll need to do a lot of research, and coming on webinars like this is fantastic because you're already taking those steps, but there is plenty more that you can actually look at and research. But it might require you to invest. And when I say invest in your personal growth and development, that can be both in time and in finance as well. Be prepared that you might need to invest in yourself financially. This is because this role is so sought after. There are so many people wanting to come into this role, and the role is expanding And so there is high competition. So you're just giving yourself as much opportunity as you can. So top tip number two is be clear on the what and the why. For me, the why is the most important here. Why do you want to be an MSL? And if you're not clear about that and you can't articulate that in an interview or even an informal discussion, then it's going to be difficult for you to achieve a role. You need to be very clear about what that is and why you want to be an MSL. And then you need to know about what do you understand by the role of the MSL. As an interviewer, if I know someone has no prior experience, I really want to understand how they understand the role function is and how they can perform that. So that will be a question you will definitely get if you are new to role around what your understanding of the MSL is, but also likely in some format, why do you want to be an MSL? Now, what I would suggest here is use the job specification. That job spec can give you lots of tips and lots of ideas about how you might want to formulate some of the answers to these questions. So you need to create your CV or resume. What we're ideally is you wanting to put in a statement, and this could be a supporting statement. It may well be within your CV itself, but why you would be a good asset for this role. And again, that's something that is likely to come up within your interview. Why are you the best fit for this role in this organization? So have your clarity about that, but ideally have that in a supporting statement when submitting your CV. Your CVs shouldn't be huge volumes. We don't need to know every detail of your life, but it should be quite concise. And that 2 to 3 pages is maximum. But personally, in the past, I found that really difficult to put all my experiences in. So what I've done is I've added things like my skill sets. I've just put them as the side as part of my CV. And then I don't need to explain that I'm really experienced at presenting, that I can understand emotional intelligence. There are lots of things that you can put in there that attribute you to your skill sets without having to add them within the CV, within the bulk of the CV itself. You need to sort of like think about your CV and how well you know it. Again, a likely question might be, can you talk me through your CV? When somebody asking that in interview, what is it that you want to say? You don't really want to talk about the paper round that you did when you were 13. That's not really relevant to the role. You really want to bring out the aspects of your CV that relate to the role. So really know it well. So actually you have that story to naturally tell. Because actually, as an interviewer, what you're trying to do is create a CV that's intriguing. What's really interesting about my CV? What does the interviewer think? Oh, I want to know a bit more about that, actually. So you're creating a CV that's intriguing rather than giving them everything all at once. Now, we've put down here about checking for typos, bad grammar, formatting. However that looks, get somebody else to have a look at it. Sometimes when you're writing your CV, you can't see how good or bad it is and what needs to be changed. So please do ask your friends, your colleagues, anybody, a mentor, to really have a look at your CV and see what you can do to adapt it and make it more attractive and interesting. I would say a slight sort of like something to know about is if there's a lot of candidates going for a role and it's being managed by an external agent, so a recruiter or a headhunter, they might use AI. So they might be looking for certain terms for them to pick up the CV. So don't feel disheartened if you're not getting any response to your CV. It might be that actually you've not got any buzzwords, some of the buzzwords that they might be looking for. And I can't tell you what they are because each organization, each hiring manager will have something different. So be aware that your CV, you can only do your best, get other people to check it and see if there's any changes that you can make. So LinkedIn. I'm sure you're aware now that actually we are branded. And what we're trying to do is enhance our branding. And LinkedIn is one way of doing it. It's the professional social media platform to be able to do that. And, you know, that it's sort of like making quite a big difference with regards to recruiters. And so whether that's sort of like headhunters, or whether that's talent acquisition, or whether that's hiring managers, they will look on LinkedIn. They may well advertise on LinkedIn. So your presence on here is really important and becoming more and more important. Have a look at some LinkedIn profiles of people with the MSL role. You can just sort of like look at it, do a search. Because what are the story that they're telling? What looks interesting? What might you want to emulate and utilize that other people have told their story and who they are on LinkedIn? With regards to your experience, though, you really need to be aligned with your CV. You will be found out if you hand in a CV that is completely different from your LinkedIn profile, because all recruiters will go on and have a look at their social media and sort of like see if there is a link. So it's important that that matches, and have that awareness as well as other social media sites that you might use. If somebody externally is looking at that, what are the kind of story that you're telling about yourself and you as a brand? We want you to engage in LinkedIn. There's no point just being on there and being quiet. And I'll talk about building a network in a minute, but we have seen people before where they have high engagement on LinkedIn and be highly successful. So Helen shared one of your case studies, Helen, I don't know if you remember. He as a candidate, before he was an MSL, was very active on LinkedIn, and he was posting, he was tagging, he was sharing. And we knew him before he got his MSL role. He then approached us and approached Helen and got his role, but he was very visible before. And if he's visible to us, think how visible he was to a recruiter or a headhunter or hiring manager. So it's, we can't underestimate that this is probably, you know, a really key way to get yourself known and what you're looking for. So when we're looking at the building the network, networks again are becoming more and more important. And you can join an industry group, and we've given an example here of mymedicalaffairs.com, but we would love it if you would be interested in joining our communities. So we have Helen on LinkedIn, and we also have One MSL. And again, you'll find lots of posts that you might want to comment on. We would encourage that. Posts that you might want to share, we'd also encourage that. Or you might want to create your own posts. You might want to put your own comments and your own thoughts or your own experiences. And again, this is really going to show to the community how committed you are in looking at the MSL role and wanting to be part of the MSL community. So we would highly, highly encourage it. So point six, find a mentor or coach is our recommendation. Now, if you don't know anybody, why not put out a question within your social media? So LinkedIn, for example, to say, I'm looking for a mentor. Can somebody help me? If you do know MSLs, maybe you want to link in with them directly and ask them, are they prepared to have a conversation and maybe lead to mentorship? What I would say about that, though, is be mindful that mentorship is a real commitment. And actually, people might not have time. So again, you might have to think about that persistence piece. You might have to be resilient and persistent in trying to get yourself a mentor, because not everybody might have the time or the ability to be a mentor. But certainly, you know, all you can do is ask. And that's, you know, somebody's going to say no, and that's the worst of it. There's a difference between mentor and coaches. And I just want to clarify this so you have an awareness. But a mentor is someone who has the experience and can impart their knowledge and their experience to you and might advise you or help you by giving you some information. A coach is someone that doesn't have to have any experience with the role, but what they're doing is helping you on your journey to achieve what it is that you want to achieve. And they do that by asking questions and by being sort of like listening to what you have to say and challenging you on your thought process. Coaches are trained and they have a higher skill set than some mentors, not all mentors, but some mentors. So the likelihood is that they will require some payment for this because it is a professional role. So just have an awareness of that. But certainly your mentor and your coach, if you have one, can really help you with your CV, your preparation for interview technique, and so on. So do utilize them and really understand what the role means, even just to ask them what does it mean to be in a large organization versus a small organization. Research the role. Helen's already mentioned the company type, and we've already mentioned the fact that big pharma can mean that you can have multiple roles and career opportunities. But in startups, your role can be really, really broad and you can get lots and lots of experience. It depends on what it is that you want to do and where your interests lie. The therapeutic area of focus is really important, because if you don't have experience, really your ideal would be to have that therapeutic area of focus, whether you've done it as a scientist or whether you've worked in it within other areas. So is it an area of focus that you're passionate about and interested? Because if you're not, it sort of shows actually in interview. So it's really important that you know about it. We've mentioned the stage of the product life cycle, because that actually affects the amount of work and the type of work you do as an MSL. So whether it's the pre-license phase, where you might be doing more of the clinical trial work that we've mentioned before, or if it's in the post-authorization phase, where it might be more about your scientific dialogue and discussions with healthcare professionals. So have an awareness of the company or the organization you're going to, what product they have that you'll be working with, where it sits in the product life cycle, but also things like their pipeline. What's exciting you about their pipeline? What's of interest? Why is this company the company for you that you want to work for? We talked about the geographical location, and I just wanted to share, I had a national role in one of my MSL jobs, and within my first year, a third of my time was weekends at Congress. It was a huge commitment. And I'm only just talking about Congress. We also had internal meetings as well. So I was away from home an awful lot. I loved the job, but it had an impact on my work-life balance. And I needed to know that up front. I was prepared for it, but I could only kind of cope with it for a year because it was a huge amount of travel. You need to be aware. Is that what you want? Is that what you can manage with your sort of like work and life balance? So be aware of that. And then the role itself, you know, when you're looking at the company, where do you need to be? You know, are you always field-based? Do you need to be in the office? How far is the office away from you? With regards to the company, there's other things that you might want to think about. What's the company values? Do they meet my values? What's the mission? What is the company doing? What are they doing for the community? How do they support patients? So you'll need to do lots of research, and that will really show in your interview if you've done that research. So top tip number 8, preparing for interview. Well, this does take an awful lot. And what I would say is perhaps don't focus on specific things. Like, I've had people specifically focus on a type of statistic, you know, unpaired versus paired t-test. That's really not important. What you're really looking at for your interview is, what does the process look like? So you might have a telephone interview, you might have a face-to-face interview. Which part of the interview is about you personally versus your experience? What might be competency-based questions? When will they come in the interview? Will I be prepared to do a presentation? Do I need to do a case study? Do I need to do sort of like review of a paper? Might I need to do a role play? There are many guises in how the interview might go, and that might happen over a number of interviews, or it might happen in one day. So really do ask and get that clarification. What does that profile or what does it look like to go for interview? We would say, though, any instructions that you get in your brief, stick to them. So as there, if they ask you to prepare 4 to 5 slides, stick to 4 to 5 slides. Again, don't want war and peace. We want to see what your understanding is of the therapy area or understanding of that clinical paper. And if you're expected to use a time frame, stick to that time frame. Sometimes people go over, but quite often people are very, very short on the time. So if you're presenting and you're only doing 5 minutes of the 20 you've expected to do, it might show that perhaps you've not prepared enough and you don't know enough about your subject. So get close to the 20 minutes and stick around the 20 minutes. Talked about planning. We've talked about research. We've got one word for rehearse, but I would add more, I'd say rehearse, rehearse, rehearse. You can't rehearse enough. And please do it out loud in front of a mirror. It makes such a big difference, but also to colleagues, friends, family, do it to anybody, as much practice as you can get. And then you can get the feedback. And the feedback might come from your mentor or even your coach. Number nine is, it's a two-way process. And we've got a really good resource on the One Community Post. There's some brilliant questions about what you might want to ask within the interview. And that's just as important, because you, if you're not the right fit, then it's not going to work. So your questioning is just as important. And number 10 is seek feedback. If you didn't get the role, just ask from the recruiter why. Again, it's part of that growth mindset. Wait, how can we help you transition from academia to industry? So we have something called the One Academy. We've got an Aspiring MSL series, which is hosted within the One Academy. And this is our online resource for the MSL community. And this is about upskilling and education. And it provides a number of training tools using a blended learning approach. So different ways of learning that are in bite-sized pieces. And it's accredited with CPD. There are online modules, and that allows you to learn about the fundamentals and new knowledge. There will be also webinars, and that's 4 3-hour webinars that will be run by ourselves here at One MSL. And that allows not just networking, but learning, sharing, and practicing, which is going to be really key. We're also going to include some tasks, and that really helps your self-learning and embedding that knowledge. So you're going to be using the learnings to optimize yourself. But in addition, there's a post-series option to also expand your network and share those experiences. And this can be done with coaching, whether it's one-to-one or small groups, or even an alumni group. So if you're interested in that, or you have any other questions, we have a post here that will show you our contact details. So please, any questions or anything that you want to ask about the Aspiring and MSL series, do use that email, contact@onemsl.com, to ask us. We have no further questions that I can see at this moment. So, Helen, shall I hand over to you?
No, thank you, Heather. And thank you, everyone, for... We're sorry, we've slightly run over time, but as you can see, there's just so much that we want to share with all of you. And it was really important that we tried to deal with as many questions as possible. So... a little, hopefully we've sort of given you a little bit more information about how best to approach your MSL journey. And we really appreciate the engagement that we've had from all of you. If you are interested in the Academy and you'd like to know how much it costs, as Heather said, please drop us an email and we'll come back to you with prices. We're aware that there are other resources out there that we feel are really very expensive, and we seek to be exceptional value for money. So that's all I will commit to at this point. But Heather, thank you for your contribution. Thanks to Greg in the background for running the polls. And thank you to everyone, and the very best of luck. We look forward to connecting with you. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Good luck. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.